Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
Odyssey celebrates back-to-school season. Brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best mobile network according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data 1H 2026.
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
We're back on the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on this wonderful Saturday, August 15th. Weird weather. It's cloudy, it's warm, it's cold at the same time. It's a little humid. Got some El Nino action going on this summer, Dan. Yeah, it's not that bad. It's not that awful. You know what? We're an hour into the show, Dan. We haven't even brought up the only good news from the week. Giants getting the All-Star game in 2028.
Give me some good news,
I like baseball.
Yay!
Not into NBA All-Star games. NFL Pro Bowl, blah.
Pro Bowl is such a waste of time. The NBA All-Star game is such a joke. Remember you and I, we did the show that Sunday afternoon before the All-Star game a couple years ago, and then went home and watched was quite possibly one of the worst NBA programmings I've ever seen with that All-Star game that was that chase.
But Major League Baseball All-Star game is a fun. I got a story for you.
Ooh,
story time.
Let's go.
On, everybody.
Yay!
So I did an All-Star game, and I remember, this is in italics, I was a celebrity bartender. And I had to do these shifts, and I think it was...
So, celebrity bartender, capital C, capital B.
Has to be in Seattle.
This was...
This is the 01?
No, this was in... was this... Well, anyways, I remember they were doing shifts with players, and I had a shift with Barry Bonds. And it was Barry Bonds and I that were bartending at this event. I want to say, who was the agent that had the party? Dennis Murad, I believe. You guys remember a guy by the name of Dennis Murad? He was Lee Steinberg's former partner.
Take your word for it.
And anyways, he had this huge party at this event, and it was me and Barry Bonds. And I was a little, I was a couple of cocktails deep, and I remember telling Barry Bonds, I'm like, I remember you at Sarah High School, man. And we actually had fun. He's actually a fun guy if you can get beyond the facade.
So once you get a couple cocktails in him, you get to see the real Barry?
Well, I think you see him in a social way. I mean, he's different. He's different. Yeah. But there's an affable side to that guy, and I saw it. So maybe...
I got to know. What was some of these conversations like? Do you remember? Radio appropriate?
To be honest with you, neither one of us had bartending experience, and everybody was just... Because he was back there.
Absolutely.
Like 20 people deep.
If I have a chance to get a drink from Dan Devone.
I've never worked so hard in my life, man. Right. Just like shucking beers all day.
So you're just serving beers? Did you have to mix any cocktails up too?
Yeah, do a little gin and tonic, but primarily it was beers. And there were a lot of players.
Okay, so it wasn't a complex menu.
I remember Mike Cameron came up to Bonds and said, hey, man, what's up? He's like, you got four for me? And Barry said, you don't get to get to the front of the line just because you're good looking. I don't think he knew who Mike Cameron was. Barry's in his own world. Was so insular. I think he had any idea Mike Cameron's like, dude, you got to get to the back
just
line.
Just because you're good looking?
Yeah, I don't care that you're like, because, Cameron was put together, wearing a tight shirt. It was like, not in his baseball uniform. Barry Bonds is sort of oblivious to a lot of that stuff, I think. I think he's just like in his own little world. But
this is besides the point, but I could 1,000% see. And again, you're a guy who listeners know, you swim in the bay. You told the story a few weeks ago that you swam with Daniel Lurie, randomly Mayor Daniel Lurie.
Came on the show yesterday, Daniel Lurie.
I could 1,000% see you showing up one morning to swim and Barry Bonds being there.
No, that...
just based on the extracurricular activities that he does, and he's a biker and he bikes in Marin.
Does
and
he really?
Around the Bay
oh,
Area.
He's a big cyclist. Yeah,
I could see it happening.
I think there's a big leap from cycling to jumping in the Bay. The one guy I think will be the one day. I expect to go down there one day and see Clay Thompson. Oh, if he was still in the Bay Area. Because I do know he swims.
I can see Gabe Kapler being down there one day. Hello, Dan.
Yeah.
I've heard these swims to Alcatraz are obviously great.
Well, I told him about it.
You said it was rock bottom.
We were at the farmer's market, and I was telling him about the Bay Club.
You're telling Gabe?
Yeah.
Okay, now news story time with Dan. I need to hear a story about how you bumped into Gabe Kapler at the farmer's market.
Yeah, we were at the farmer's market, and this is maybe his first year, and I told him, you should go swim in the Bay. You know he's a fitness freak, right?
Oh, absolutely,
and
he
ate it up. He's like, yeah, for sure. He's like, what do I got to do? And he's like, is there an issue? I'm like, dude, you just show
initiation.
Up.
Initiation? Yeah. You got to win 107 games.
Then obviously he didn't.
There was an ice cream at that farmer's market, right?
No ice cream. What?
Remember, he was notorious for eating ice cream for the taste and then spitting it out.
I actually asked him about that. He denied that that was actually a thing. So,
yeah.
He also might have been trying to save face there. I don't know. There's a lot of mystery surrounding
Gabe
Kapler. I'm
one of the few guys that like Gabe Kapler.
I enjoyed Gabe,
too.
He was very fun just to chat and interact with.
Yeah.
It was when the game started is when things started getting frustrating. One of my favorite Gabe Kapler stories, aside from the fact that there's a lot of really fun Gabe Kapler stories, one of the ones I always like was he was notoriously late for his pregame scrums. And there was one day we're waiting for him. He's taking forever. And all of a sudden we see this guy in a Steph Curry jersey entering through that left field gate out there, you know, doing a run. And who is it but Gabe Kapler? And it was the first time I've seen him he was wearing a jersey. So it's basically a tank top. It's the first time I've seen his full arms exposed. I mean, Popeye would get self-conscious around this guy.
Ridiculous.
This guy, he's coming up just like, look at this guy. He is jacked.
Yeah.
And just this dripping in sweat. You could tell you'd just done some gnarly ass run. And just
Wind sprints,
something like that. No, I think he was doing an actual run because he came in through that left field gate out by the Chevron cars.
He was a real deal. Going back to his days in the minor leagues when he was a player, he was always put together.
But yeah, just the most massive biceps.
Can I tell mine real quick? My favorite Gabe story. So I actually, back in my writing.
By the way, wake up, Ruderman.
Back in my writing days for SF Bay, I did a feature on E40 getting a bobblehead. It was E40 bobblehead night. So Gabe Kapler is a big consumer of music. He would go to Outside Lands for his off days, and he would talk about music and big R&B guy, rap guy. And I asked him, I was like, oh, Gabe, like, what do you think of E40 getting his own bobblehead today? And he responds, he takes a second, he goes, I'm really happy for Earl. And he calls him Earl. And I thought that was so funny. I like had to think of who Earl was. And I realized, oh, Earl Stevens is E40's real name.
There's two beautiful nuggets about that story. First of all, what Gabe Kapler said. But secondly, knowing pasta, that would stick in his head. If you know pasta, that's the one thing.
It was great. And he said that Earl was the soundtrack of his minor league summers. So
but
that's
not,
cool.
Not to bring it back.
Gabe Kapler does have a very, very good like mental collection of rap and hip hop knowledge.
But not, and Sam's turned it off before.
But not to bring it all,
I failed to do it.
All roads going back to Buster Posey, but it sort of gets back to what I'm saying. And one of the reasons why I pulled from him because he got this community. He's like the kid of hippies, basically, you know.
He was. No, I remember he told a story of how like he would be driving around his parents would drive him around as a kid and like his dad stopped one day to like spray paint a message on a billboard. Like Gabe like forever you want to say about the current political makeup of the Giants, whether they're too far right, I'm going to say it, Giants fans, this team's a little bit more conservative than you would maybe want to admit. I say this as a bleeding leftist myself. Gabe was just so far into that spectrum, but at the end of the day, it didn't matter if you're right or left.
Got to win.
If you're not winning, it doesn't really matter. And as much as I did enjoy Gabe and interacting with him, whenever the Marlins are in town, I always go and say what's up to him. It just didn't work out as a manager. And I'm glad that he's having success as, you know, the general manager of the Marlins there. But yeah, it just didn't really work out as a manager. And again, getting back in the conversation at hand today, 888-957-9570, is Buster Posey's legacy under fire? Is his performance as president of baseball operations impacting his overall Giants legacy? And you know, I'm going to pull a quote again from this Brittany Garoldi story, and I hope I'm saying her last name right. We'll have to look that up. There's a quote here at the top that says, you know, This is from another rival executive who, you know, spoke on the condition of anonymity, said it's either really admirable or really foolish for Buster to take over the job that he's doing. And we'll know which is which when it is over. And that when Buster did take over this job, not just when he came back to ownership, when he came back to ownership, it was like, awesome, Buster's in the building. We have a smart guy in the building. But when he took over this position, Dan, his legacy as a giant icon, a Giants icon, was solidified. He was minted in the Mount Rushmore of great Giants. There was nothing he really needed to add, but he is still trying to add to his legacy. To which, yes, I do appreciate that he feels like he needs to come back and fix what's going on here. I love that energy. I don't think it's going to last long enough to a point where it'll negatively impact his legacy.
Yeah, we always talk about this.
Yeah.
Did he get, was there anybody that booed his introduction last
week? If I were to power rank the receptions last Saturday at the Wall of Fame ceremony, yeah. Number one, not a shock, Bruce Bochy. And number two was Buster Posey. Like, I think the only people who are going to get bigger ovations than Buster Posey when we celebrate former players, Bochy, Barry probably gets that. And then the biggest ovation when it does happen will be Tim Lincecum. Like, that's, I don't think any other players are getting bigger ovations. Although there's those three, Barry, Bochy, Timmy. I think everybody else is getting a lesser ovation than Buster right now. I don't know if that might change, though, the more things go down this path right now.
Well, at the time of his hire, I was pretty outspoken that it was a bit sort of atypical and unusual that they did what it is that they did, because you know, everything that you laid out when it comes to general managers or president of baseball ops in Major League Baseball, it's not a legacy or a guy that was a former player that everybody respects, because the job is so different from being a player. And when you think about the top GMs in the game today, from Dombrowski to Preller to whoever it is, these dudes are bean counters. They're Ivy Leaguers. And to your point earlier, what it is that you were talking about, that fans maybe felt as though it was good to get Devers, what you did with Adames. But GMs should be on a whole other spectrum, because their player evaluation and weighing money and player development, all that sort of stuff is something we sort of, you know, we don't go there. But that's where these GMs, they're almost quote unquote nerds to a certain degree, because they the things that you have to do to be a successful president of baseball ops, when you look at the resume of Buster Posey, very few of that translates or crosses over in terms of making you adequate for that job. So I always felt as though it was an awkward fit. And then when we tried to marry the two, saying, well, he's such a great player, such a great San Francisco Giant, and he understands, to your point, what it was like to win, and he knows the energy in the players, well, that's not necessarily how these things are done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's sort of where it begins and ends with me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's almost like, there's a reason why you don't see as many former players doing this job anymore. I think these guys, they know the baseball aspect of it, in terms of you identify the talent. That guy's good. That guy's not good. It's the operations aspect of it, though. That's where I think, as you say, you call them the bean counters, these executives, these Ivy League guys, you know, the Farhan Zaidi types, the guys who never played the game, but they came up in the game. They studied the game behind the scenes, you know. Dave Dombrowski.
But their lens of how they see the game is so different.
Exactly.
From everybody else.
And I think this is where analytics has really changed the game, because analytics has so narrowed the margin of error that you have, because analytics is all about identifying different ways to make your team incrementally better in any little way possible. And when you do that, you eliminate so much margin for error, to where you really got to just overdo it for every little advantage that you get. When you're a former player who maybe isn't as in tune with that kind of aspect of the business, I think you're at a disadvantage there. And that's part of the learning curve that Buster Posey's going through. The baseball parts he gets, it's the operations part that maybe he's still trying to figure out. He makes that big trade for Rafi Devers, and on the surface, we're all celebrating it. But it could very well go down as one of the worst trades in Giants history. I mean, we had Keith Law on the morning roast that week, and he was ripping the trade as being kind of an overly impulsive trade. He kind of wondered, you know, is Buster listening to the people behind him? Because that was just not a deal that would have made baseball sense to inherit all of that money, still sending prospects back. Sure, you got your bat, but at what cost? And now it's just looking like such a disaster of a deal. And I think there's a reason why Buster's the one who rescued the Red Sox and not one of these other executives who maybe didn't play the game, but have so much front office experience already.
Yeah, and another front office person that maybe puts more weight on the back end of the contract, the money, and just what it's going to do in terms of handicapping your team should it not work out, or is to your point, probably putting a much stronger emphasis on all the metrics and all the data as opposed to someone like Buster Posey who sees it more from a player's perspective.
Yeah. 888-957-9570 is the number to call or text. How is this job impacting the legacy of one Buster Posey? Is his legacy under fire? And I think an easy comp is the Chris Mullin comp, Dan, in terms of just former player icon running a team, it not going well. But even then, Chris Mullin had a run of success. Chris Mullin did, you know, he did hire Don Nelson, who, you know, rest in peace, Don Nelson, who passed away this last Sunday. You know, Mullin hired Don Nelson. Don Nelson then pushed Mullin to make the trade for Stack Jack and Al Harrington. Mullin made that trade, which Mike Dunleavy was a part of, and we got We Believe out of it. But then things kind of fell apart after that. And Chris Mullin, despite that run of success, you know, was not viewed as a great general manager of the Warriors. And now you look at him, and Mullin's one of those celebrated figures in Warriors history. No one talks about the GM stint, in part because things have gone so well for the Warriors, you know, over the last 15 years. And maybe that'll be the thing for Buster, too. Maybe he'll step down from this job after a year or two from now, and someone else will come in, the team will get better, and we'll all forget that Buster was ever a president of baseball operations. Like, I don't think that Buster will be around in this job long enough for it to negatively impact his legacy. And by that, I mean, if it really does start to go off the rails, whether the rest of this season or into next year, then sometime middle of next year where it's going to be announced he's not coming back next year or in 2028, and the organization will move forward without him in that role. He'll maybe step back into the ownership role, but then it'll be someone else to come in and clean things up. Like, Buster would have to be here for like 4, 5, 6, 7 years of bad baseball for, I think, his legacy to get negatively affected. And I just don't think he'll be here long enough. The only way that Buster is here for several years is if things start going well. And by that point, it would be enhancing his legacy if that situation plays out.
I would agree with you, but there is, you know, there is Charlotte, North Carolina, and the greatest to ever do it, Michael Jordan. And if you were to say his name out there, they, you know, that franchise is just like, that guy is the worst.
Yeah.
You know, they don't.
Well, he's stuck around this entire time, though. Yeah. If Jordan's, you know, stepped down after 3 or 4 years of running things out in Charlotte, is he talked about differently in Charlotte?
No, I mean,
how long has Michael Jordan been out there? A while, right?
Well, he's no longer an owner.
He was there for a while, though.
No, he was there for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I to your point, yeah, I get it. I think I lean towards you. I think he's always going to be associated with the dynasty and doing what it is that he did and bringing a World Series to San Francisco. But in the here and now, I don't know if that's necessarily the question that's on the mind of Giant fans is his legacy. It's more about how do we fix the team tomorrow? How do we fix the team for next season? I don't really care about whether or not I boo this guy at an old-timers game 15 years from now. Like, that'll take care of itself. I think the bigger question at hand is, who's at fault? What do we need to do? Is it
Nerds? Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Outdated automation doesn't have to slow you down. Graybar helps you identify risks, modernize strategically, and minimize disruption every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
Odyssey celebrates back to school season. Brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best mobile network according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data 1H 2026.
What if the thing you're listening to right now never got interrupted? What if it could play uninterrupted from room to room on Sonos? What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? What if you really like how it feels and you become a Sonos person who can't stop saying to their friends, what if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? Because it's not magic, but it's not not magic.
Buster, is it Nasian? Is it Vitello? What is it that we need? Is it the players? What is it that we need to do to fix the team? All the imagery and all the pomp and circumstance of his legacy, yeah, but how do I fix this team as of like yesterday? Is sort of what I think is more pressing.
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, that's in part will define how this all plays out here. Because, again, he's got only 1 year left on his current 3-year deal.
So, Dan, I guess so. With that, what I'm saying is, do you get rid of him this offseason?
I don't know. Like,
Posse, you have a thought?
I think just with the lockout as well, adding that uncertainty to the Giants want to reset things and then have to shut things down and then restart things with a whole new crew getting in place. I don't know how that factors in. I'm not saying that they will hold on to Buster and Tony because they're afraid of the lockout or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying is I just simply don't know how you factor that in. Like, if you ask them right now, how are you looking ahead to things with the lockout? They're going to tell you that we're going to operate, and all teams are probably going to say this, we're operating as business as usual until we can't. So, like, I don't know how that is. But behind the scenes, though, they have contingency plans. Behind the scenes, they have we're doing this if there is no lockout. We're doing this if there is a lockout. We're doing this if we have to fire people. We're doing this if we don't have to fire people. I'm not going to sit here and act like I know exactly what those conversations are like, because I don't. But I got to imagine it is part of their thinking process right now. Risotto, I don't know. How do you look at all this right now?
I would say 2 years is not enough for president of baseball operations, and maybe people would disagree with that, but I think there's a vision in their mind to compete next year. And whether that's a realistic vision or not, it's the vision that the San Francisco Giants have always had. And they're like the Cardinals, how the Cardinals were for a long time, right? And now the Cardinals have realized that it's okay to take a step back, and it's okay to develop a J.J. Weatherholt, and it's okay to bring in guys and take a step back. And the Giants just aren't there, and they have too much money committed to even get to that point for next season in the previous year. So Buster, the contracts he has, they're there, and I don't see them getting out of it, especially with whatever implementations are going to be in with the collective bargaining agreement. But they're kind of stuck having to compete. They have to build around this group, and whether it's a good core or not, which we've realized it's probably not, they're stuck, and I think Buster's stuck with them.
And I guess if we really want to talk about negative impacts on Buster Posey's legacy, let's say that he does step down after this year. Let's say he steps down after next year, however you want to parse it out. New group comes in. Let's say this current group of young guys actually starts, turn into good baseball players. Some of them who were developed under Buster, some of them who were developed under Farhan. Dan, the way I operate is if you're the president of baseball operations, you get credit for everybody who is underneath you, whether you drafted or acquired that guy or not. Let's say the next guy makes this team a good baseball team, but they can't get better because they're stuck with Devers and Adames eating up lineup spots in roster space. Then down the line, I can kind of see Buster's legacy not being tarnished, but it's going to be a reminder of the negativity that was felt around his time as president of baseball operations. If you're building up this young talented team, but you got these two albatross contracts that are just kind of hindering it, that's where I can kind of see this turning into a negative spin more so on Buster's time here after the fact.
See, I think his legacy, and I think that Buster Posey as the president of baseball ops is going to be defined not by the mistakes that he made in getting Adames and getting Devers, because mistakes are made by general managers. It's the world they live in.
Oh, absolutely.
It's what they sign up to
better,
do.
Better, more qualified men than Buster Posey have failed spectacularly at this job.
So it's not that, but how do I get out of this? Like, Buster Posey the biggest challenge for him was not trying to find endeavors they can hit. It's just too many years and it's too much money. And I also think, getting back to our point, when you talk about the disrespect of Vitello and Vitello losing the locker room, I think a lot of it started when he refused to come out of the game for a pinch runner. And you talk about how younger players see this and it's a trickle-down effect. I think that has a huge effect on this baseball team. The question now becomes for Buster Posey, it's not that I made a mistake, but how do I rectify that? Now, if he can get out from underneath Devers and it's not as much damage as a lot of us are anticipating, well, then I think I look at this entirely differently. He's admitting a mistake, but he's willing to move forward, as opposed to saying, Devers is here, he's bigger than I am, there's no way of moving that contract. We're stuck. Things like stuck and albatross, that's not what you want to hear when you're talking about the future of a team.
Yeah. No, you're right. We'll keep this conversation going on the other side, Dan, because you bring up the money aspect of it. There was a line in there that I think completely captures how the Giants should be operating, what team they should be emulating. And absolutely, if they did do this, I think it would solve a lot of things. And another problem with Buster Posey that we'll get into is just, what are the defining moments? The problem is all the defining moments are chaotic moments. So we'll get into that. A couple other nuggets, though, before we get to the break. One's Giants-related. One is not Giants-related. The Giants-related one, this is per Shana Rubin just a few minutes ago. Matt Chapman says his core muscles were torn off the bone on both sides. He's been dealing with the pain since the April series in Cincinnati on and off. But that play in Arizona was the last straw. So Matt Chapman's been dealing with adductor issues going back to April. Yikes. That's not what you want to hear. And then the non-Giants nugget, it's a Warrior nugget. New Orleans Pelicans have decided to waive Jordan Poole. Sources indicate... The Golden State Warriors, Miami Heat, Sacramento Kings are among the teams monitoring Poole as he becomes available on the market. Pool party! Let's bring it back. Brought to you by Fairmont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
Now back to the best Giants talk in the Bay. The Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7, The Game.
We didn't win the baseball game. We didn't score it runs and we lost the game. And that is Giants baseball. There is a lineup for today. Would you like to hear it now? Got Drew Gilbert leading off. I'm not going to sing the whole thing. That would be horrific to listen to. But we do have a lineup, Dan. Drew Gilbert leading off in center. Rafi Devers batting second, D in at DH. Bryce Eldridge batting third.
Eldridge!
The future and everything for the next 15 years.
The future!
Everything for the next 15 years.
I don't have that one for some reason.
Really? Oh, that's unfortunate. Junghoo Lee, Jungy, batting cleanup today in right field. Olivas Basabe batting fifth at second base. Drew Kavanaugh in the squat. He'll be batting sixth. Turner Hill making his big league debut. He'll be batting seventh and in left field. He's a left-handed hitter. And Ruderman was telling us he's got to have like 40 people in the stands today, Turner Hill.
Is he 40. Local?
40 friends and family. I'm not sure, Risotto, if you want to Google that really quick.
I think he's from the Midwest, but a 26-game hitting streak in Sacramento.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
and
he's coming in hot.
What do you think of Basabe?
What do you think of Basabe?
He's been pretty solid so far.
Yeah. He looked, if ever there was a guy that looks like a second baseman, like his body type, he hit when he first came up. He sort of mellowed.
Give him some run. You know, I want to see. It's after seeing the hot stretch that Tyler Fitzgerald went on a couple years ago, I try not to get excited about a quick hot stretch there. I miss Tyler Fitzgerald. He was
Turner
a good
Hill,
guy.
Marietta, Ohio.
That stinks to come from Ohio. Buddy Kennedy batting eighth at third base. And Christian Koss batting ninth at short. And, of course, the ace, Logan Webb, on the hill. But that is your Giants lineup today.
If your name is Buddy Kennedy, isn't it just imminent that you're going to play Major League Baseball at some point in your life?
That is a pretty solid baseball name. Buddy
or run
Kennedy.
For office.
That's true. I don't know if you want. I don't know. It doesn't really work well when Kennedy's getting to politics these days.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Speaking of ownership, now that Kushner's little brother owns the Lakers, just another reason why to hate that team.
Oh, my God. That was such a weird. So, since you bring that up, the Lakers were owned by Mark Walter, who, super stupid rich guy, who also is part of the Dodgers ownership group.
Yeah.
And I don't know the full details on this.
Put that whole thing together.
Yeah, but yeah, the Guggenheim Group. But this guy Walter. He is, again, he bought the Lakers last year for $10 billion, sold them this year for $12 billion. He's under federal investigation by President what's his name's Justice Department for like a $16 billion loan fraud, something like that. But the first big question we kind of have, the sports angle of it, is what happens with his ownership stake of the Dodgers? Does he potentially put the Dodgers up for sale? And where it gets really fun, Dan, if you really want to have fun with this as a Giants fan, apparently Shohei Ohtani and Andrew Friedman have the ability to opt out and leave the Dodgers if the team is sold. So, Mark Walter, sell the team. Sell the team. Sell the team. Okay, I'm just going to do this.
And I have one development on that, too. Ooh. Not a development.
Development.
Not a development. Sorry. Not a development. That was not a good word to use. I regret using it.
A nugget? A nuggy nug?
So what was uncovered in this investigation is that Mark Walter had a stroke during the World Series, I believe in either 2024 or 2025. And there's people inside his companies and organizations that don't believe he's fit to serve anymore as the managing partner of the Dodgers.
Oh, that's actually,
and also,
really,
by the way,
to hear.
Josh Kushner just bought into the Giants ownership group too.
Yeah, he really?
He's a minority owner.
That was last year, right? His investment firm
earlier this year.
Oh, yep. It was earlier this year. Okay.
And I think the Walter selling the Lakers, that has to be a record for the shortest stint of, because that deal was finalized last October and he's already selling the team.
Yeah, I was going to say, weren't they just sold?
I mean,
apparently they were.
Made a quick $2 billion in less than a year owning the Lakers. I mean, that's
That's why if you're Shohei Ohtani, and I'm not saying that the Dodgers are going to go bankrupt anytime, but that's why deferring money is always a scary thing to do. You never know, man. You never know if any of us will be here next week. You know?
Dan, you know, the only thing.
Bye, Felisa.
The only thing that keeps me going is the knowledge that hopefully one day that contract will be so much worse than Bobby Bonilla Day that it'll just cripple the Dodgers into the just next dimension. Oh, that'll be great. Except, unfortunately, they're going to have, you know, 6 World Series championships and they're going to fully colonize the entire country of Japan by that point. So the Dodgers are just going to keep printing money. I'm pretty sure they're going to have their own mint at some point.
Remember
in the next
Frank
few years.
McCourt couldn't make payroll? The former owner of the Dodgers?
He's in the news again for something.
Oh, God, what'd he do this time?
I think he, like, owns a soccer team now, but he made his money off parking garages and then...
Of course, it's always parking with that guy. And weird. Weird how that works out.
Had a very high-profile divorce that resulted in him being a disaster.
You know, as we kind of think about, you know, where society went wrong and where it all started to fall apart...
Kushner owns the Giants.
If you could get in a time machine and go back and undo the moment where society started to fall apart, maybe it's... If there's a marriage counselor out there, get in your time machine, go back in time, and maybe keep Frank and Jamie McCourt together so they keep owning the Dodgers and don't sell it to the Guggenheim Group, and they just keep running that team in just perpetual mediocrity, and then Shohei becomes a Giant, and we all live happily ever after, and all that fun stuff. Maybe that's the move that we need to make. That's the thing in history we need to go back and change.
Do you think there's a good enough marriage counselor to keep Sharon Stone and Robert De Niro together in Casino? Your random thought of the day.
Ooh, I was not expecting a Casino reference right there.
We can move on.
Hey, if you think you're a good enough marriage counselor to make it happen, you know, get the time machine and then go back in and save the world. You know, that's all we got to do. Can Buster Posey save the Giants? Boy, would that be great for his legacy. And we're reacting to the Brittany Garoli piece in The Athletic from this past week titled... Buster Posey's Giants legacy is on the line as adulation is shifting to anger. And there is a line, Dan, as we're talking about, you know, how can Buster Posey fix this team? And there's a fun little line that I really like because it talks about how, you know, despite the struggles of this season, fan interest isn't one. The Giants are averaging over 36,000 fans a game, which is the 6th best in baseball through the first week in August. With the A's departure from Oakland, now the only team in the Bay Area, the Giants ranked 5th highest in Forbes' most recent MLB franchise valuations and are one of just 3 teams who own their own stadium. And then this quote from a veteran agent, they should be the West Coast Yankees. They have too much money to be this bad. And I could not agree more, Dan. This is a stupid rich organization. They got 30 or so people on that board. All those people... got their own little yacht that they can hang out on, which means that you're very, very rich. And then you got the Kushner money now flowing in, which and gross as that is, if you can use that to buy your way out of some of these contracts, heck, if the money's green, I'll take it. I don't care how dirty it is at that point. That's called awful baseball logic right there, folks. But Dan, this team does have the financial resources to essentially buy out of these contracts here. And me, I love spending the money of billionaires that I don't have. That's one of my favorite things to do. This is on the part of you start looking at the ownership group as a whole beyond Buster Posey. And you ask the question of just, is ownership willing to spend their way out of this mess that they're in right now? The Yankees never go through downturns like this because they're not afraid to just eat money if they need to. The Red Sox, there is a period where they would just eat whatever money they needed to. I remember the Jacoby Ellsbury deal. I think they ate a fat chunk of that money just to get rid of him. Like, when you're, I think the Dodgers have all sorts of dead money on their cap sheet as well. Rich teams can eat bad contracts and still keep going. This notion that they, you know, and again, this is me spending a billionaire's money. The idea that you can't eat half of a Rafi Devers or a Willy Adames contract when you are a team that is this wealthy, that doesn't really sit well with me as a fan. And I think with other Giants fans, it should be the same. When you have the money to make your to spend to make things easier for your team, but you're not doing it, as a fan, that is frustrating.
Yeah, and I think this gets back to what it is that I was saying earlier, that it's not about the trade for Devers or where you're at with Chapman and Adames. I think, you know, as a president of baseball ops, you're going to make mistakes because you got to stick your neck out there and you got to be risky and you got to push the edge of the envelope, but it's how do you get yourself out of it at the end of the day? That's now really sort of the challenge for Buster Posey. And I don't think it's the New York Yankees that are a good comp, but I think it's the other team in New York that you should keep an eye on.
The Mets.
It's the Mets and how they, because you know the Mets are going to unload half of those guys.
Oh, and Steve Cohen has more money than Stearns.
Yeah, and so they'll do it again and probably get, you know, five more free agents that are bust because they're going to screw things up. But the point being is that that's, you know that the Mets aren't going to stay complacent, that they're going to unload guys and do this all over again. So yes, the Giants need to be aggressive in that regard. So that's why I'm not, I don't accept the sort of like, well, you've got this ball and chain that you have to deal with in the big three. I don't accept that. I think you can get out. If there's a will, there's a way. And again, this is where Buster Posey defines who he is. You made a mistake, that's fine. Now get creative and get Devers the hell out of town and hand the keys to Aldridge and use that money and go get some
nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
Odyssey celebrates back to school season. Brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best mobile network according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data 1H 2026.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Pitching, like if you want to spend $97 million or $254 million on a guy for the next 9 years, get somebody in the pen or get us some guys in the starting rotation. Mistakes happen, but now how do you get out from underneath where you're mm-hmm. where you are?
Like you look at like a situation with the Brewers, and they threw a bunch of money at Christian Yelich and Brandon Woodruff. Woodruff's injured with a shoulder injury right now, and Yelich hasn't been a productive baseball player in years. the Brewers are still having success because they're just so good at drafting and developing talent, but they can't hold on to their great talent for a long time. It's why Willy Adames is not still there. It's why they had to trade for, you know, Freddy Peralta a couple years ago. It's, you know, partly why they probably didn't make any massive swings for like a Tarek Skubal at the trade deadline, because
they did, not for Skubal. Didn't they go after Skubal pretty hard, the Brewers?
Not hard enough.
Or Tampa Bay, I'm sorry.
Tampa's another one. They just, but I bring those teams up because when they get a deal like a Yelich deal that they can't move off of, they got to figure out creative ways to be good around it. And they've been able to do that.
Yeah.
Look at a team like the Orioles. That's a negative example. Remember, they signed Chris Davis to that $150 million deal. He became an absolute potato. They had no way of moving off of him. And that deal crippled that organization for years because they weren't creative enough to work around it. The Giants are not that those organizations. They are not a team that just needs to eat contracts and be creative around them. They are an organization with the financial wherewithal and ability to, as we've just said, move off of those deals and figure out other ways to bring in other guys. And then, yeah, you're going to have to eat some of that money. But they are not an organization that just have to sit around and figure out ways to work around these deals. They can take action and just move off of them. Again, though, this is spending other people's money. They have to make the decision to want to do that.
They can take the hit, but will they is the question at the end of the day.
Yes, and then you're getting into the philosophical conversation of, if you are an owner of a sports team, what, I guess, is your end goal? Is your end goal to win? Is your end goal to make money? I think a lot of these owners, their end goal is to make money. And a great way to make money is to not waste money. And if you're trying to get a good return on investment, eating $100 million to send a player to go play elsewhere, that's just not a business decision that most business people are willing to work with. But there's a difference of the business of business and the business of baseball. In the business of baseball, you're dealing with people and fans' emotions and expectations there. And the people who are paying to see your product do not care about what your billionaire financial situation is. They see a guy on a team who shouldn't be here and a group of people with the money to do something about it, and nothing's being done. And if you're a fan, like I am, like all the other Giants fans at the ballpark are, the 38,000 who were there last night, I'm seeing an organization with the resources to do something, but they're not. Simple as that.
And part of the reason is because of what it is that they've been able to build here, and that is the fact that you're still putting butts in the seat and you're one of the worst teams in baseball. That's not good. I mean, it's good for them because, to answer your question, are they there to make money or make your team better? They're all there to make money. Because let's not forget where these guys came from. They're all business tycoons.
Absolutely.
They're not baseball fans. They are to a certain degree, but these guys are business people. And at the end of the day, it's about profit margins. It's about revenue streams. And that's where they live, right? That's how they cut their teeth. So it's about making money. And what's scary is that if you're still getting $36,000, $37,000 for this team, what's the incentive for me to change? It's the Chicago Cubs for decades. Remember the lovable losers?
Mm-hmm.
You would go out there. It was like a bar. Seriously, you would go to Wrigley in the middle of the afternoon and you would drink and the place would be sold out and people would just go to Cubs games because that's what you did. It was fun. And Cubs ownership was like, they were never good. They never went out and made a trade. They never went out and got free agents. Like, why?
Yeah.
We're making money hand over fist. Regardless, why do we have to spend it? And I don't know if we've reached that point with the Giants, but when you're selling out and you're a last place team, then going to ownership and saying, you know, spend some money.
I do think you are kind of seeing that happen with the Giants because, I mean, even last night, every Friday night, or every game in general, you look out at the left center bleachers beyond that, you know, 391 sign, and every night without fail, you're going to see a large swath of college kids going tarps off. And you go out in that outfield bleachers on a Friday night, it's a very young crowd, high school, college age kids. Like, you're seeing Oracle Park become a fun hangout spot. Like, this is one thing we talked about in the morning roast a lot. Like, this year has really kind of driven home how great it is to be at Oracle Park for a day game, a night game, an afternoon game. It's an enjoyable place to be. Like, good on the Giants for having this absolute jewel of a ballpark. Like, this isn't breaking news. Like, you know, Giants got a nice ballpark. We've known that forever. But it's really showing this year how great that ballpark is because of people going to it. But to your point, though, Dan, yeah, it's a very real fear of complacency. That's what it is. Are the owners complacent with, we got 38,000 people on a Friday night to see the two worst teams in the National League play one of the most fundamentally unsound baseball games you'll ever see. And you're going to have another 35,000 or so people today, and then you're going to have 40-plus thousand people tomorrow showing up to get one of those Hello Kitty Funko Pop bobbleheads that are given out tomorrow. Like, just because you have fans showing up, though, does not mean you're succeeding as a baseball organization. You might be succeeding as a business organization, but not as baseball. And this is why I love Joe Lacob so much as an owner. I know he's going in the crosshairs right now because he hasn't, you know, brought in every single free agent ever this summer. But Joe Lacob is an owner who understands the best way to make money as a sports owner is to win. If you do that, all the money will come later. This whole notion of, you know, ownership that just wants to get attendance, sell merchandise, make money, and all those things around the margins, don't be that kind of owner. Be the kind of owner that understands that when you win, everything else gets taken care of. Whereas with Giants ownership, I just see a level of complacency sometimes that I don't know if they have that same hunger that Joe Lacob has.
I once had a conversation with Mark Cuban about that very point, and he disagreed with me because I said winning is, at the end of the day, if you want to sell out and you want people in your stadium or in your arena, you got to win, right? And he said, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh, interesting.
Not. And he believed, and I guess the Giants are testament to that. If you get it right, like the Giants did with their stadium, and you create the right atmosphere, it becomes a place of destination at the end of the day. Sort of like Fenway. It's a place we go as a tourist. If you're in the financial district, let's go watch the Giants play. Let's go look at the Bay. We'll talk business. It becomes not necessarily about the team, but about visiting a venue and having fun. And they've been able to, let's just put it in, how about this? What if they were still a Candlestick? Do you think you're getting 35,000 people going out to the stick in this weather to see two of the worst teams in baseball?
No, you're not.
So from a business standpoint, what they're able to create with that stadium is sort of where a lot of this begins and ends. Because, you know, that stadium is paid for, man. So that just means that you are printing money. And it's now become not about the team, but rather about a destination, just like any other iconic spot in the Bay Area, right? Or in San Francisco, down by the water. And they've been able to establish that. Again, is it, you know, is it at the detriment of the fans as far as improving the team?
Oh, absolutely. Because what you're doing there is you're changing the finish line. That's what you're doing there. The finish line is the bottom line, basically. If you're a 102 loss team, but you're still making money hand over fist, are you successful? I think some owners might say yes. You know, if you lose 102 games, but you're, what is the term in the black when you finish with more money than less money?
Yeah.
But you're deep in the black, most owners would be like, okay. I mean, John Fisher on line one. How many owners these days would lose 102 games, be deep in the black to where they're making a lot of money, but not be satisfied? Like, Joe Lacob, I think, is one of those owners. Like, Joe Lacob's not going to be happy with his on-court product from the Warriors for the next few years. Because even though that the Warriors are making a lot of money, the product in the court's going to be full of losses. That's not how what Joe Lacob likes. And that's going to lead to changes at some point down the line. With Giants ownership, though, again, where's their finish line? Is their finish line at the money's looking good, or is their finish line at we are raising a trophy? And that's where I think, like, I get what Mark Cuban is saying there, is we want to create a destination. But then my thing is just, like, I think Mark Cuban doesn't really understand where the finish line is for sports. Sports and running a team, it's different than other businesses because there's outside emotion attached to it. Like, a company like Google, who roots for Google? You know, like, no one's wearing Google jerseys. No one, like, Google's bottom line does not mean anything for me on the outside looking in. I'm not rooting for Google to win championships. Like, that's not what it's about. But with sports, that's what it is. Like, you have people who are rooting for a certain outcome that has nothing to do with the ownership's desire to make money. And I do think as an owner of a franchise, you need to respect the fact that you are managing an entity that millions of people have an emotional investment in. And I do believe, and you call me naive, say, Sam, you were born yesterday for believing this, but I do believe it is the owner's responsibility to cater to that emotional investment more so than their bottom line. I don't know, that sounds ridiculous to say, but at the end of the day, this is sports. There's an emotional aspect of it that has to be acknowledged and respected.
It's sports, but it's also run by business people, not sports people.
I know.
You're a sports person.
I know, I'm fighting an uphill battle on believing that. I'm very well aware of that.
But the danger is that if you're going to live in the black and not be a good baseball team, at some point the well will run dry. Yes. At some point.
It's not sustainable.
No. And at some point, either something bigger or prettier comes along, or your team just is so bad that the fans finally catch on what it is that you're doing and they stay away. I mean, you can only ride that horse for so long.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in Fenway, again, you bring up that as an example, like, great destination for so long. Red Sox had lots of up and down periods and didn't win a lot, though, during that time. You know, you want to talk about another great destination, Pittsburgh. A beautiful ballpark, yeah. Great location. Looks like a great place to go watch a game. That is not a successful organization right now. They're having a good year this year. Overall, that's not a successful organization because they haven't won enough to where filling up that ballpark is worth it. And Mark Cuban, very well-respected owner in the NBA circles, he only put together one championship. You know, as an NBA owner, that's not a whole lot. You know, in the NBA, it's measured in championships, not championship. Like, an owner can win one championship in the NFL, or, like, if Jed York hosts a Lombardi, he's minted for life. You know, like, Larry Bear got, you know, elevated status for hoisting one World Series trophy, more so when he hoisted two more. But in the NBA, you got to hoist multiple trophies. Cuban only did the one. When you're saying that he focuses more on things being a destination than winning, that's a big reason why you only got that one championship then. Because if your focus was more on destinations than winning, then what you're going to get is a destination. Now the Mavericks are...
Clarify that. He wasn't telling me that he doesn't want to win. He was saying that you don't have to define the popularity or a good product by winning. He's like, I can still create a good atmosphere for whether I'm catering to family and kids or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and put people in the seats and still be working at developing a winning product, but not winning at that particular moment.
I see. Okay. So that makes a little bit more clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's on me. He wasn't saying that, yeah, forget about winning. Yeah. I don't want to win.
But I still think to your point, though.
But his whole thing is his emphasis. Like, you still can win, or you can still be successful and not have a winning product.
See, that's where I would maybe start to differ on that, because as you just said, that well will dry up. You can't be crap with a good baseball park.
Well, I think keeping in mind to finish that, Cuban would say, but aspiring to win all along. But if your product at the time isn't winning, you can still, it's not an excuse. His point to me was that's not an excuse for you as an owner to not still be successful in terms of putting people in the seats.
Mm-hmm. I see. So not win. Okay. Yeah. But I mean, that's at bare minimum, you want to get people in the seats then, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah. But you still want to, appease the fans by trying to make your team, like the New York Mets are terrible this year. But Cohn and Stearns, they did everything they could within their power, right, to make that a winning franchise, right? Like, mm-hmm. they signed everybody. Like, you can't blame them. I mean, it was terrible decisions, speaking of Peralta. I mean, all those guys that they signed, it just didn't work out, but they spent more money than anybody.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, they're not winning. So, to Cuban's point, that's not an excuse for people not to still go see the Mets play this year, is what I think he was trying. He says you want to create the environment as, quote-unquote, being a destination, even though you're having an offseason.
I got you. All right. Let's finish this conversation up on the other side. We're going to keep talking Buster Posey's legacy, the defining moments of Buster's tenure.
What's that thing out on the couch?
I don't know. I think we're going to bring it in, though, in a little bit. We're going to get live in-studio Ruderman replay at 11:30, and who knows what that's going to be like.
Up first.
We're going to twist the camera around. We're going to put the camera on Steven Rizzotto, too. We're going to have a crazy four-way conversation on this show, because why not? Bosses are out of town. Who's going to stop us? That's a very dangerous question to ask. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.
You'll pay for this.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Outdated automation doesn't have to slow you down. Graybar helps you identify risks, modernize strategically, and minimize disruption. every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
Odyssey celebrates back to school season. Brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best mobile network according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data 1H 2026.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.